Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Chof Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the upper part of Daf Chof Tes, we will be beginning our shir from 11 lines from the top. The beginning of the line has a note of a posuk, Divrei Hayomim Beis Perek Daled. In the middle of the line, it says Ksiv v'haperach v'haneros. Before we actually read the Gemara, let us glance at one of the features of our pre-marked Gemaras, the topic headings. They are called Nosei. You will see them on the outside margin, and in this case, under our Nosei topic heading, we have the following. Asiyas HaMenoros Bizman Shloimu HaMelech, the manufacture or the construction of the Menoros in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, Hitzrichu Kol Oitzreis Hazov, drained all of the gold supply of Shlomo HaMelech. It may be noted that in the Beis HaMikdash that Shlomo HaMelech built, in addition to the menorah of Moshe Rabbeinu, he made another 10 menorahs. These additional 10 menorahs, the Gemara will tell us, was a drain on his gold supply. It may be noted before we look into the Gemara that the kingdom of Shlomo HaMelech was known as very, very wealthy. Turning to the Gemara, Ksiv v'haperach v'haneros v'hamelkachayim, these are different parts of the menorah and things related to the menorah. Zohav hu, michlois zohav. That's the posuk. The Gemara wants to know, my michlois zohav, what is the intention of that expression in the posuk? Omar Rav Ami, we have a little letter Aleph over here, and before we read the answer to the question, let's glance at the outside margin under our Mivneh heading, what this letter will represent. So if you note in the outside margin, Mivneh is a structural note in our marking system. Of course, we have, in addition to topic headings, we also feature structural notes to explain the different geometric forms and related matters that we have added into the text as part of our Gemara marking system. So in this case, you'll notice there's an Aleph and Beis in the outside margin under the Mivneh heading. Shtei nekudos, 2 points, bekesher lemenoros. So you will notice in the Gemara, we already saw an Aleph, and 3 lines later, you will notice a little Beis in the text. Those are 2 points regarding the menoros. Uvahemshech ha-Gemara makshe al kol nekuda. In the continuation of the Gemara, the Gemara will ask on each one of these points. Umesumon kach. The questions are noted with diamonds that have colored in tips. And you will notice in the Gemara text when they appear, we will note that the diamond, what each diamond is questioning. So in the meantime, Rav Ami says that the expression michloi zohov means shekilsoi l'chol zohov sogur shel shloimoi, that the making of the menorahs that Shlomo Melech did in his time finished off all of the zohov sogur. The zohov sogur, Rashi explains zohov sogur, what does that mean? A gold, zohov is gold, sogur literally means closed. Shebeshah, Rashi says, Shebeshah shemoichim oisoi, when this gold would go on sale, nisgorois kol hachanuyois shemoichim es hazohov. The all other stores that sold other kinds of gold would close. In other words, there was some type of great demand or some very special aspect to this kind of gold that all the other gold merchants would close when this was being sold. So the Rav Ami says that the making of the menorahs drained or finished off all of the Zohav Sogur of Shlomo. The Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav, continuing in the Gemara. Eser menoros also Shlomo. Shlomo made 10 menoros. V'chol echos, v'echos hevi lo elef kikar zohav. for each one of the menorahs, he needed a supply of 1,000 kikar. Kikar is a measure. It's a, each individual kikar itself is a rather large quantity. So each menorah demanded an amount of 1,000 kikar zahav. V'hichnisuhu elef pe'omim lekur, v'hemidu al kikar. So each, we'll call it a unit of 1,000 kikar, for a less glamorous term, we'd say each glob of 1,000 kikar of this zahav was then put into the furnace, the furnace used for purging the gold of foreign materials. So in the course of this we'll call heating process, each time the gold was put into the furnace, one kikar of the 1,000 would be reduced. So his teaching was they put it 1,000 times into the kur, and each time it was put in, so one kikar was reduced. So after 1,000 entrances into the furnace, you were left with then one kikar of, we'll call it, the purest material. 2 points were made. One, the Aleph point, was that this drained his entire gold supply. The second point was the way it was made with regard to its encounter with the fire. So now the Gemara will ask questions. You'll notice the diamond with the color and tip, and we've noted Makshe al Aleph. This question will be on point Aleph. The Gemara asks, Aini, is that so? Namely, that the manufacturer of these menorahs drained his entire gold supply. For Hoksiv, we are about to see a pasuk. The pasuk itself is around 3-4 lines of Gemara. The pasuk describes the great opulence of the monarchy of Shlomo, and being that there was so much wealth, as the pasuk will describe, this gives rise for a sense of wonderment. How can it be that the making of the menorahs drained off all of his wealth? Of course, we are phrasing the question in such a way that we are setting ourselves up for the eventual answer. So the Gemara asks, regarding point Aleph, that Rav Ami said that Kilsu Kolzov Sogu Shel Shlomo, Eini, is that so? V'chol Ksiv, V'chol Klei Mashkeh Melech Shlomo Zohov, V'chol Klei Beis Yar Alevonon Zohov Sogur, Ein Kesef Nechshav Bimei Shlomo Lemeuma. The pasuk says that all of the drinking goblets of King Shlomo were made of gold, and all of the vessels of the king's palace were of zohov zogur, and silver had no meaning whatsoever in Shlomo HaMelech's times. So the pasuk is describing immense, vast resources of precious metals. So how can you say above that the making of the menorahs finished off all of the Zohav Sogur? So the Gemara answers, Zohav Sogur, Kuar Minon. We're not saying that it was never said by Rav Ami that the making of the menorahs finished off all of the royal wealth. All Rav Ami says is that all of that special kind of gold was used up. The Zohav Sogur was used up, but not all of the royal wealth. The Gemara asks now regarding point Bays. Point Bays had to do with the loss of weight, so to speak, of the gold each time it was put into the oven. The Gemara asks, Omi chaser kulehai, does it really become so reduced that each entrance to the tanur it becomes reduced? The Ha Tanya, we have the following Tanaic source. Rabbi Yossi, and you can see that it's a Tanaic source by virtue of the fact that it appears in a frame. In the Gemara marking system, all Tanaic literature is placed in a frame to distinguish it from the rest of the Gemara. So in this Tanaic source, Rabbi Yossi Buda Omer, Maisavoysa Menorahs Beis Hamikdash Yesera Al Shel Moshe Bedinor Zahav. The menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, we mentioned that Shlomo HaMelech made menorahs. So it says here that the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash was greater, was larger in size than that of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu oversaw the making of the menorah for the Mishkan. And the Beis HaMikdash menorah was larger than that of Moshe Rabbeinu's Bedinor Zov Kurdiakini. This Dinor Zov Kurdiakini is a type of coin. We can say that how big can a coin possibly be? So whatever, even if it's a large coin, so the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash was a little bit larger than Moshe Rabbeinu's menorah. V'chnisu shmoinim b'omim l'kur v'miduo al kikar. They put it 80 times into the furnace, and after 80 times, it was reduced by this dinar zohav kuryakini, which is a fragment of a kikar. So you see, after 80 entrances to the tanur, it took 80 times to reduce it, to purge it from an amount equal to a dinar zohav. How can you say above that each entrance to the furnace would be responsible for an entire kikar reduction? The Gemara answers that the phenomenon of the purging of the gold was not something that was, we'll say, let's say, an arithmetic reduction. Namely, it was that the same amount became reduced after each entrance to the tanur. Rather, what happens was that it's true on the sum total of 1,000 insertions to the tanur, there would be a reduction of 1,000 kikar. However, it worked in such a way that after the first reductions, a large amount was reduced. But as time went on, as it got closer to the end, much smaller amounts of material became purged and melted away. So that it wasn't an equal reduction each time, as we thought, but rather we are maintaining which we originally said, that after a sum total of 1,000 times into the tanur, the 1,000 kikar became reduced. But as it came close to the end, the amount that got reduced after each entrance to the tanur became smaller and smaller. And that's what this phrase means, kivan dekoi koi. That's what the expression means, as we just finished explaining. Omar of Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omar of Yonison. As we see in the Gemara, we have a new geometric form that we want to explain. So before reading on in the Gemara, let's glance at the outside margin, the Nosei. Ma melamed ha-posuk al ha-menoira ha-tahoira. The posuk in Vayikra describes the menorah that is tahoira. The word tahora will be the focus of our questioning. We will see triangles. Under the Mivneh heading, you notice a triangle, and we've featured the expression ma'akav in parentheses. Ma'akav means an attempt to keep track of the give-and-take style of the Gemara. So with the point of the triangle facing up, that will represent she'elois, or kushos, questions, or the raising of difficulties. With the triangle appearing point down, that represents tshuvos, or responses. So, turning to the Gemara, my dichtiv al hamenora hatorah. And as we mentioned, we want to know, and we've dashed underlined the word hatorah, because this is going to be the focus of our discussion. What does hatorah mean? So, the Gemara answers, sheyordu maaseha mimokoim tahara. That the way, the instructions on making the menorah descended from heaven. The heaven being described as a place of purity. And the Gemara, we'll see a little later on, describe this, that there was a type of vision that Moshe Rabbeinu experienced whereby he saw the menorah, and his verbal instructions were not sufficient, but he needed to see how it was to be constructed, and that's what's meant by the menorah HaTorah, whose instructions came from a place of purity, they came from heaven. The Gemara asks, Ela Me'ato, if that's how you're interpreting HaTorah in the context of the menorah, what are you going to say about the following pasuk in the context of the shulchan, the table of the Lechem Aponim? It says, Al HaShulchan HaTohor. Are you going to say, Sheyardu Maisov Mimokom Tor? Are you going to say that? And Rashi simply says b'tmiyah, you read that with wonderment. In other words, there's some type of assumption in the Gemara that for sure not. There was no need to explain how the Shulchan should be made. So if that be the case, so what is the function of HaTahor, Elo, Tahor? Michlal Shehu Tamei. The word Tahor implies that you're dealing with a vessel that could become ritually impure, that could become Tamei. Hochanami. So too, the use of the word HaTahor by the menorah means Tahora Michlal Shehu Shehi Tamei. That it's a vessel that is Tahor, but is also capable of absorbing Tumah. Maybe noted that in the realm of Tumah and Tara, there are certain types of vessels, of materials, that cannot mekabel Tumah. For example, stone material is not mekabel Tumah. But the menorah, the shulchan, they are mekabel Tumah, and that's all the pasuk is trying to reveal. The Gemara now, with that, we noticed that the last geometric form was we had a triangle with the point facing up. That meant that this was a kasha on the first, on the hesber that that was given of Shiyordu Maseo Mimokoim Tahara. So at this point, we're holding by a question that you, just like by the Shulchan, you can't say that. So by the menorah, you can't say that either. So he's offering an alternative pshat, namely that it's Tahora Michlal Shi Tamei. The question right now is, can we possibly go back and preserve the original pshat of Shiyordu Maaseh Mimokom Tahara? The Gemara answers. Now, this is a very long answer, but let us say ahead of time that the role of this piece of Gemara is, in fact, to come back and reinstate this answer of Maaseho Mimokom Tahara. That's why we have this marked off as a long answer. The Gemara will explain, and we'll say a word or two before reading the Gemara inside, because this is a long answer, so as to keep matters straight, a word of introduction may be of assistance. As far as a pasuk needing to tell me that the Shulchan is Tohar, there is importance and significance in teaching that, because there was room to think otherwise. The Shulchan was essentially a wooden vessel covered with gold. The Shulchan was designed to be positioned all week in one place. It wasn't designed to be a portable table, if you will. And as such, it's called a Kli Eitz Ha'osui Lenachas, a wooden vessel that is made for non-movement. The source in the Torah that deals with tumah absorption on the part of vessels mentions different materials, and it mentions wood in the context with sack material. Sackcloth is material made for, as the name implies, making sacks. Sacks are a type of item or a vessel that you fill it, when it's filled up, it's filled up with the purpose of moving. You fill up a sack in order to transport its contents from one place to another. That's called a davar she'osui l'taltel. Davar she'osui l'taltel mole v'reikon. A sack is something designed to be moved not only when it's empty, but also when it's full. Therefore, the ability of vessels to absorb tumah is dependent on that. And we say vessels, we're speaking specifically about vessels that are mentioned in the pasuk, together with sack, including wood. Now, if you have a wooden vessel that's not designed for movement, it's called a kli eitz ha'osui lenachas, or a kli eitz that's not osui l'taltel mole v'reikon. Now, the shulchan. At first glance, it may appear to be a kli eitz ha'osui lenachas. If that's so, it's not similar to a sack, and as such, it probably would not mekabel tumah. The pasuk reveals to us the Shulchan Tor, which implies that it's the pure table, implying that it has the potential of being mekabel tuma, reveals that the shulchan, in fact, had a certain element of portability to it, that it was designed to be moved, even though at first glance it seems to have been designed to be positioned in place all the time, from and every week the lechem aponim was changed, but the table itself, one might have thought, sat in the same place. The pasuk reveals, and we will elaborate on that later in the Gemara, that in fact the table had a certain portable element to it. That was not obvious. Hence, the pasuk was needed to reveal that which I would have thought to be otherwise. In the case of the menorah, though, to tell me that the menorah, which was pure metal, and as such pure metallic, meaning pure gold, gold does not have the same standard as we mentioned with regard to the wooden vessels and the sackcloth vessels. In the case of, since in that pasuk with where sack appeared, metal was not mentioned. When it comes to metal vessels, even if the metal vessel is not designed to be portable, it will be mekabel tuma. It does not have the same standard that is applied to the wooden vessels. So when you talk about the menorah and you tell me that the menorah, which was a golden vessel, would be mekabel tuma, that's obvious. I don't need the pasuk in the manufacture of the menorah to tell me that it's mekabel tuma. So if the pasuk is telling me that the menorah is tahora, it must be trying to tell me something else. And in fact, that something else is what we originally said, that ma'aseha, shiyordu ma'aseha mimokoim tahara. This will now be the subject of the text of the Gemara that we're about to learn. So at the end of the line, you notice the word bishlamo with a triangle point facing down. This represents ultimately a response, and you'll notice how this triangle matches the original inverted triangle, at which point the Gemara had said, shiyordu ma'aseh mimokom taro. Here we will in fact reinstate that answer, that idea. So the Gemara explains, bishlamo ha'sam, I understand very well over there with regard to the shulchan kedereish lokish, that there is a need to tell me that the shulchan is tohar, indicating that it could be makabel tuma in light of a certain objection or issue that was raised by Reish Lokish. Notice we have a brackets. If you skip the brackets, that will make the reading a lot easier. We just got finished saying Bishlamo Hasam Kidereish Lokish. Skipping Elo Hacha, but over here, in the case of the menorah, the Tahora She Mechlaushi Tameh Pshito Klimatchis Nenu Klimatchis Ma'abim Tuma. In the case of the menorah, though, there is no chiddush in telling me that it could be makabel tuma. That is obvious. It's a metallic vessel, and all metallic vessels are makabel tuma. So what's the point by the menorah? We will, of course, go over all of that again, but with the markings, we want to show you how to maintain the flow of the reading. We also have a little additional marking. Under the word hosam, we have under the word hosam and hocha, we have a double underline with a design in it. That is simply that your eye should be able to connect quickly the contrast. We said bishlama hosam, and then when you skip the brackets, you immediately see elo hocha by the menorah. So you can see hosam and hocha quickly by using this particular marking. Let's now go over the Gemara again. We mentioned Bishlama Hasam Kidereish Lakish. In the case of the Shulchan, I need to be told that it's Mekabel Tuma because of a question that Reish Lakish once raised in the topic of the Shulchan. The Omar Reish Lakish, my dichtiv al HaShulchan HaTahor, what is the Pasuk trying to say when it says the Shulchan HaTahor? Michlal Shehu Tomei. It implies that the Shulchan could makabel tuma. And regarding this, Reish Lakish asks, Why should it mekabel tuma? Kli eitz he'osui lenachashu. It is a wooden vessel that's designed for non-movement. Nachas means to stay in place. V'chol kli eitz he'osui lenachas. Notice we have a phrase marking. You should read it together. It's an idea. Kli eitz he'osui lenachas. Any type of, when you have wooden vessels that are designed for non-movement, eino mekabel tuma. So why does the pasuk say that the shulchan is tahor, which when you say something is pure, you're implying that it could be mekabel tuma, when in fact it should not mekabel tuma by virtue of the fact that it's kli eitz osui lenachas elo? So what is the explanation? Malame, this teaches us that in fact the shulchan was not really osui lenachas. Malame, the pasuk is teaching us, this pasuk with one word in it, ha-tahor, is telling us shemagbin osui le'oile regolim. The shulchan was picked up out of place, brought to the entrance of the heichal, and from at a certain point from which the people, the masses that assembled in the Beis HaMikdash courtyard, who came on the regolim, on the holidays, the Oile regolim, people who came for their thrice annual holiday pilgrimage, the mitzvah of Aliyah Saregel to the Beis HaMikdash three times a year, the public would be able to see the shulchan umarim lohim lechem upon him. They would show the public the breads that were positioned on the table. Don't forget, we're talking about they moved the table to the entrance of the Hechal with the bread on it, the Oimer Lohem, and it would be announced, Re'u chibaschem lifnei hamokom. Look, by looking at the breads, notice the love that you have in the eyes of the Almighty. My chibaschem, what is the manifestation of this love and affinity that is associated with the Shulchan? Kidur Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, as according to his teaching, Domer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Neis Godol Naaseh Balechem upon him. There was a great miracle that occurred with the lechem upon him, siluko kesiduro. The removal of the bread was with bread in the same state as it was when it was set up. Now, when it was set up, the bread was freshly baked and set up as warm, fresh bread on the table. It sat there for a week. It sat there from Shabbos to Shabbos. What are we telling you? We're saying that it sat there for a week and remained warm and fresh, without a little burner underneath keeping it warm. Shinemar lo sum lechem cham b'yom hi lo kol. The pasuk indicates that the bread was warm on the day that it was removed from the table. So after all of that is said, you notice we came to the end of the bracketed section, which contained the significance of telling me the Shulchan HaTor is, don't think that the Shulchan was a Kli Eitz HaOsui L'Nachas, but rather it was made to be moved, as we just described, for the purpose of the Oilei Regolim. Ela hacha, but in the case of the menorah, do I need to be told Tahora that it is that it's capable of being mekabel tuma potentially? Pshita, that's obvious. Kli matchis ninu, ukli matchis mekabel tuma. The menorah is a metal vessel. It's made of gold, and gold or metal vessels are mekabel tuma without any qualifications of nitata moli vareikon. So I don't need to be told that which is obvious. Elo sheyordu maaseo mimokum taro. Rather, the pasuk that describes the menorah as a menorah Torah is in fact telling me that which we said originally when we asked what's the purpose of this pasuk. It is to tell me, like we said, that there was a miraculous vision of the menorah that was revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu, whereby he saw how to make it. It was not only, we could say, not only audio, but it was visual also. You'll notice we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara that is designed to enable you to connect this last point with the time it was originally seen. And you can see also to the left-hand side of the Gemara, opposite the last narrow line of Gemara text, the arrow pointing to that line. Tanya, we have a Tanaic source that describes other vessels as well that were shown to Moshe Rabbeinu. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yuda Omer, Oroin Shel Eish. The Oron is the vessel that contained the Ten Commandments, the Oron HaKodesh, V'shulchan Shel Eish, U'menorah Shel Eish, Yordu Min HaShamayim, in this case, a fiery vessel, table, Oron table and menorah, a fiery model of this descended from heaven, V'roah Moshe, the Osa Kemoisam, and Moshe made like that which he saw, Shenemar, Ure v'ase kitavnisam asher ato mar'e bahor. So that you see from the pasuk that says Ure, you will see and construct according to that which you saw. Now the Gemara asks, based on this last phrase of that said asher ato mar'e bahor elameyato, there's a pasuk that says veikamto es hamishkan kemishpatoi. Asher her Esau Bahar, Hachi Nami? Are we to understand that there was also a fiery Mishkan that was shown to Moshe? The Gemara says no. There's a difference between the two psukim. Hacha, in the case of the Mishkan, Ksiv Kemish Potoi. You'll notice if you look closely at our markings, under the word Kemish Potoi, there is a dotted underlining. Hasam, in the case of the Oron Shulchan Menorah, Ksiv Ketavni Sam, and there you will notice also a dotted underline. These are different expressions. Rashi explains the word Mishpato is Mashma, the laws were told to him. They were shown to him in terms of shown is an expression meaning also when someone explains something, someone can explain how to get from one place to another, you will say, he showed me the way. He was shown the directions. Even though it might be a verbal explanation. So in the case of the Mishkan, where the word Mishpato appears, that indicates the laws regarding the Mishkan. However, in the case of the Oron Shulchan Menorah, where the word Kitav Nisam appeared, that indicates a model, form. Therefore, in that case, a form was actually shown to him. Amr B'chia bar Abba, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Gavriel Chogur Kemin Psikya Hoya. Rabbi Yochanan tells us that the angel Gavriel appeared as an artisan wearing a psikya. Psikya is a type of, it seems to be a type of apron which keeps one's clothing from getting caught on the vessels that are being made. So he was wearing this psikya, the hera loy lamoshe maisa menorah, and Gavriel demonstrated how the menorah was to be made. Dichtiv veze maisa hamenorah. In my mind, I wonder if is this a different explanation to that which we saw above, namely we saw a fiery model appeared of the Shulchan. Is this a different explanation, or is this just another angle to the same thing? Whatever the case, you see another miraculous appearance, if you will, in order to assist in the making of the menorah. Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. We have the following Tanaic source, which indicates additional things that were shown to Moshe Rabbeinu. Shloisha dvarim hoyu koshin loy lemoshe, at shehera loy HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'etzboi. There were three things that were difficult for Moshe Rabbeinu to understand until the Kodesh Baruch Hu pointed out what they were. Ve'elu hein menorah v'rosh chodesh. Rosh Chodesh indicates the new phase of the moon, which constitutes the time at which to declare a new month. Ushrotzim. Shrotzim are the unacceptable types of creatures when it comes to that which one may eat. Shrotzim being a certain type of creature, generally speaking, short-legged, crawling kind of animals. The source cites now sources for each one of these points. Menorah. How do I know that the menorah was shown to Moshe Rabbeinu? Dichtiv v'zeh ma'isa menorah. And the word v'zeh indicates something that one points out, as if you take your finger and you point at something and you declare, this is such and such. So the pasuk with the menorah, in fact, has that word v'zeh in it. Rosh Chodesh, the appearance of a new lunar phase. Dechtiv ha-chodesh ha-zeh lochem rosh chodoshim. That pasuk is in the context of Rosh Chodesh, and it says HaChodesh HaZeh, meaning this new phase. This represents the new phase of the moon. So a moon in its new phase was shown to Moshe Rabbeinu. Shrotzim d'chtiv v'zeh lochem hatomei. The Yeshomrim af hilchus shchita, and another opinion adds to the list. Even the laws regarding shechita. Shechita is a process whereby an animal is slaughtered, and the animal is slaughtered from the neck. Rashi explains what aspect of hilchus shechita was shown to him. Shechita is not simply a matter of taking a knife and slicing open an animal's neck. There are certain boundaries on the neck, namely the lowest point at which the cutting can take place, and an uppermost limit. So shechita, the cutting of the knife, must take place within the boundaries. And therefore, if, let us say, the knife was inserted into the animal's neck at a certain point, too high up on the neck, too close to the head, that's called in Maseches Chulin, and Rashi quotes it over here, it's called Mugremis. Mugremis is a phenomenon of shechting outside the acceptable shechita boundaries. So, if you never saw it, it would be difficult to understand where that point on the neck is. So that also had to be shown to Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenemar v'zeh asher taseh al hamizbeach. And the Rashi explains that this pasuk is a reference to shechita, and you see the word bezeh, it had to be shown. Shtei parsha shebemezuzah ma'akvos zu ezu. This we saw in the Mishnah. The two portions of Kriyat Shema must be present in the mezuzah, otherwise one does not fulfill the mezuzah requirement. Ve'afilu ksav echod ma'akvon, and even one letter, if there is a problem with it, is binding. In other words, everything, it must be written in a perfect form. The nosei, the topic heading that we have on the outside margin here, says nisyonos lahasbir hadikotoni afilu ksav echod ma'akvon. We're going to try to explain what is meant by that expression. So the Gemara opens up with a question and asks Pshita. It's obvious to anyone who knows that there's a mitzvah of mezuzah that the ksav has to be perfect. Perfect meaning that no letters can be missing. So the superficial reading of the Mishnah seems to reveal something that's obvious. The superficial reading of the Mishnah was that even ksav echad ma'akvan, which would mean even one letter, if it's missing, would render it unfit. To that, the Gemara asks, well, that's obvious. Now, I was wondering, well, what's so obvious about that? So Rashi answers, the word in the Torah instructing one to write the mezuzah, it says, uchsavtom. And it seems to be obvious that the word uchsavtom is darshaned as ksiva toma. So if you accept that point as obvious, ksiva toma means complete, a complete writing, then this Mishnah would seem to be superfluous or redundant. Omar Rav Yehuda Marav. We have noted Rav Yehuda Marav here with an aleph, and that's because the explanation of this phrase, ksav echad ma'akvon, comes in two stages as far as the Gemara is concerned. So the first stage is represented here, that Omar Rav Yehuda Marav, lo nitzrucha ela lekutzo shel yud. The teaching of the Mishnah is not coming to tell me that if you have a letter that's missing, it will render it unfit. That, in fact, is obvious. But even if the kutza shel yud is missing, that would render it unfit. That means you have the letter yud written, but the letter yud that may be written in there is missing the kotz, or the kutza shel yud. What kutza shel yud, in fact, is, happens to be a machloikis between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi learns the kutza shel yud is the little the little right leg of the Yud. The Yud is essentially it's a very small letter, and on the lower right-hand corner of the letter Yud, there's a little leg that descends. The Tosfos does not like that pshat, and therefore Rabbeinu Tam is Meforesh, the Kutzav Shel Yud as a little point that appears on the upper left hand, or on the upper part of the Yud. He calls it the Roshay Kofuf. The head of the Yud is a little bit bent, so a type of projection of the top of the head of the Yud on its left hand side. Though that which we're explaining is in fact subject to further research, which goes beyond the purview of our shiur. For the time being, let us simply say that Rashi refers to the right hand lower leg of the Yud, and Tosis refers to something on the top of the Yud. Nevertheless, the Gemara asks, even if you say that pshat v'ha nami pshita, but that too is obvious. Namely, if the Yud is missing some aspect of it, so it's obvious you have not made that letter in its required fashion, and therefore you don't have the Yud for all legal purposes. And I don't really need the Mishnah to tell me that's binding. Elo l'cheidoch de Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. The Mishnah that teaches me Ksav Echad Me'akvon is telling me, is referring to another teaching of Rabbi Yehuda Amarav. Yom Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, kol ois she'en gvil mukuf lo me'arba ruchay seho psula. Any letter, any singular letter that is not surrounded by parchment is unfit. You'll ask, how do you have a situation where a letter is not surrounded by parchment, gvil being the parchment? Well, if you just imagine that every letter that you see has, in the case of, let's say, regular paper, there is white. There's the paper background that surrounds every letter. If you have two letters that are mudbokos, that are connected, touching each other, so at the point of connection, at that point, the letter, we'll call it the black, the ink, runs from one letter into the other. So at that point, the white background is not surrounding that individual, that particular letter, after it's connected to the next letter. So the Mishnah is telling me, afilu ksav echad ma'akvon, means that the halachas, the regard to ksav echad, individual letters, is binding. And what do we mean by individual letters? That each letter must appear individually and not connected to another letter. And that's what we mean, ksav echad ma'akvon, that you have to have gvil mukaf lo me'arbu ruchaysel. Omar Ashion bar Nadboch Mishmeid Rav Yehuda. Nikev, if a hole develops, Toichoi Shelhei Kosher, Yerechoi Posel. He is describing a halacha concerning a hole that forms in the context of the letter He. So if the Toichoi of the He becomes Nikev, then that is Kosher. Now, what exactly is toichoi shel hay? There are two pshatim that one will find in the Rashi. One pshat is, it's a reference to the little leg, the descended or the disconnected leg that appears to the lower left-hand side of the letter hay, if a hole develops in that. The second pshat is a reference to a hole in the interior of the hay, where there is white, where is the parchment. The parchment that forms the interior of the hay develops a hole in it. So that's toichoi shel hay. If it gets a hole, it's kosher. Yerechoi, he says, that if that gets a hole, the yerecho is the right leg of the hay, that will render it posel if it gets a hole there. Om Rabbi Zera, we have a little aleph over Rabbi Zera, because we'll see another opinion in a moment. So Om Rabbi Zera, l'didim shol minei Rav Huna. Rabbi Zera says it was explained to me by Rav Huna. Rav Yaakov Omar, and Rav Yaakov is the other opinion. We're not talking here about a controversy between the two, but simply an additional opinion on the same topic. Rav Yankov tells us that it was that the following was explained to the Din v'Shalaminei to Rav Yehuda. In other words, that which was explained to Rabbi Zer by Rav Huna was explained to Rabbi Yankov by Rav Yehuda, the following. Nikev, Toichoi Shelhei Kosher, if a hole develops in the interior of the hay. We finished describing that just a moment before, and we mentioned that there are two pshatim in the Rashi regarding that. So a nekev there doesn't affect the kashrus of the letter or of the tefillin. Yerechoi, now here you'll notice a difference between this and what was said before. Before, the line before, at the beginning of the line, you notice Yerechoi said puzzle. Here, it's qualified. Yerechoi, if a hole develops on the right-hand leg of the hay, it depends. Im nishtayer boy kishur ois ketana kosher. V'im lav posel. So this approach is not an across-the-boards ruination, but rather it's a qualified situation. It may be that this was the intent of the first Manda Omer as well, but he didn't explain it himself in as great detail as this presentation. We have a little illustration that appears in the right-hand margin of the Gemara, the inside margin of the Gemara. We see a letter He drawn, and there's an arrow. The arrow indicates the point at which a hole developed. And we're saying that if the hole developed at that point where the arrow is, you'll notice from that point upwards, till you get to the roof, there is a little bit of leg that in fact does descend. That if that amount of leg that descends from the roof till the hole in the right-hand leg of the hay, if the amount of leg that in fact is attached to the roof constitutes what's called by the Gemara Shirois Kitana, an amount of ink that would be the same size, let's say, as the letter Yud, which is a small letter, so that if that amount of descending leg would be enough to make a Yud, so the hay is kosher. However, if the hole is at a point above where we drew in the arrow, so that you have very, very little descending from the roof before the hole, that would be unfit. And that's v'im lav posel. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a new geometric form, and we have a nosei mivneh heading that accompanies this. And the outside margin, you see a triangle with a colored in tip. Shnei Maisim Be'inyan Oisiois Chatuchos. There are two incidents that the Gemara will feature regarding letters that are cut or broken. This is a name, Agra Chamua de Rabbi Abba. We don't have a marking to indicate a certain thing that is noteworthy anyway. This is not a very common individual as far as the Shas is concerned, but he appears at the very bottom line of Omid Beis as well, with a different problem, an unrelated, unrelated to broken letters, but yes, related to the writing of holy scrolls. He will appear there as well. So if you notice at the bottom of Chof Tes Amid Beis, the last line, this name appears, Agra Chamua de Rabbi Abba, and just like over here, Agra, who was the father-in-law of Rabbi Abba, he had a problem and he brings his problem to his son-in-law for legal ruling. The same thing happens, in fact, in the story that appears later with Agra, the father-in-law of Rabbi Abba, bringing a different problem to his son-in-law. So we turn back to our Gemara, Agra, Chamua de Rabbi Abba. Now turn to the top line of Chof Tes Amid Beis. If Sika Le Kara Dehe De Ha'om Benikva, a hole developed, or a break. If Sika is a break, a break in the Kara, the leg of the hay of the word Ha'om. The word Ha'om begins with a hay. And the breaking of the letter was because a hole, Benikva, a hole developed. Also, the Kamei de Rabbi Abba. So, Agro came to his son-in-law, Rabbi Abba, for a legal ruling. Omar Le, Rabbi Abba said, Im nishtayer bo kishur ois ketana kosher. If there remains from the roof down till the point the hole appears, enough descending ink to in another context make a small letter, then it's kosher. V'im lav, if the hole is too high up on that right-hand leg of the hay, namely it's very close to the roof of the hay, then posel. Another story, Romi bar Tamri, dehu chamua de Romi bar Dikuli. Seems like it's father-in-law day here. Romi bar Tamri, who was the father-in-law of Romi bar Tikuli, if sika le kara devov de vayaharoig benikva. The word vayaharog starts with a vav, a hole developed in the letter vav. Also the kame de Rabbi Zera. So the case came to Rabbi Zera. And what's the story? Is it kosher or not? Omar Leh. So Rabbi Zera said, in order to evaluate whether the Vav still appears to be a Vav, Zil Aisi Yanuka Delochochim Velotipesh. Bring a child that's not too wise and not too foolish. Namely, a child that won't know by heart that the word is read vayaharog with a vav in it, but he is a child that's capable of recognizing letters. So e kori le vayaharog, if he reads it with a vav in it, kosher, then it's okay, even though the vav has a hole in it, breaking it, making it appear smaller, we'll say, than a regular vav. But if the child reads it properly, then it's sufficiently recognizable as a vav and kosher. Elo, if not, then essentially it would be yehoreg, who the word is a different word altogether, upasel, and unfit. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. Notice we have to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara a maisa written, the word Maisa that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. This is explained in the outside margin under our Nosei heading, Maisa She'ola Moshe Rabbeinu Lamorom. The Gemara will tell a story. It's a story that may be known to many of you, where Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the heaven, Umotso HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kosher Ksorim Lo'osios, and he saw the Almighty putting crowns on letters, the Sipuro Shel Rabbi Akiva. And in the course of this story, we'll see how the Kodesh Baruch Hu explains that the reason for his putting crowns on the letters is because those crowns ultimately were going to be explained by Rabbi Akiva. So he was, the Kodesh Baruch Hu was providing, we'll say, Torah material, added Torah material. Even the crowns of the letters was something that was going to preoccupy the great Rabbi Akiva many generations later. So the Gemara inside. Omer Vidomarav, Bishosh Sha'olah Moshe Lamoroim, Motsoi LaKodesh Baruch Hu, Sheyoshe V'Koshe Ksorim Lo'osios. When Moshe Rabbeinu went to the heavens, he saw, he experienced the Almighty who was seated and putting crowns on the letters. In the course of this Maisa, you will notice some underlining. The squiggle underlining that you'll see here is in order to keep track of who the speaker is, Moshe Rabbeinu and the Kodesh Baruch Hu. There will be other Omars that we will not note because they don't involve Moshe nor the Almighty. So Omar Lefonov, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks. He says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Mim Akev Al Yodcha, who is causing you to write this? Who is making it necessary for you to add these crowns? Omar Loi, so the Kodesh Baruch Hu answers, Odom Echod Yesh She'osid Lios B'sof Kamadoros, there is a man that will appear in future generations, after a number of generations, V'akiva Ben Yosef Shmoi, and his name was Akiva ben Yosef, known as Rabbi Akiva. She'asid lidroish al kol koitz v'koitz. He in the future will come to expound and reveal Torah revelations on each al kol koitz v'koitz, on each koitz is each little projection from the letter that we refer to as the letter crowns. That each crown, the crown is made up of little projections. So he, on each projection from the letter, he will darshan tilin tilin shalachas, mountains and mountains of halachas of Torah revelation. Omar Lefonov. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribbono shel Olam, hareuli, show him to me. Omar loy, so Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Chazor lachorecha, retract, go, retract meaning, or move back. Holach v'yosha b'sof shmoina shiros, he went and sat 8 rows back from wherever he had been positioned originally. V'lohoya yodea ma'hein oimrim, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand, comprehend what they were saying. In other words, the Kodesh Baruch Hu was showing Moshe Rabbeinu a video recording of the future, what was going to be with Rabbi Akiva and his Torah learning, and there was Moshe Rabbeinu unable to comprehend what was being said. Toshash kocho, and he had a sense of despair. He became weak, so to speak. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu is the great receiver of the Torah, and he couldn't comprehend what they were discussing. Of course, what we're saying in the context of our shir, I want to emphasize, and I can't emphasize it enough. We are presenting things on a very superficial level. One has to realize that to say that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand something requires a great deal more explanation than the simple translation that we are offering. So with that disclaimer in mind, we will go ahead. So the Gemara described that Moshe Rabbeinu, upon witnessing the Torah teaching of Rabbi Akiva and his inability to understand what Rabbi Akiva was saying, he experienced a sense of despair. Kevon shigil ledover echad, they then Rabbi Akiva and his students reached a certain point. Omru lo tamidov, the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva said to him after hearing this particular point, Rabbi, minayinloch, well, where do you know that from? Omar lahem, this is halacha lemoshe miSinai. This is a halacha that was communicated to Moshe Rabbeinu from Sinai, and I know it only by virtue of the fact that it's part of an oral tradition that the first link in the chain was Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu, seeing that he was of significance in the transmission of Torah, after all. In other words, there is some aspect of Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu was necessary for. Nisyashva daito, gave him a feeling of confidence, a good feeling, a feeling of importance, and he felt better. Chozar lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Omar Lefonov, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks up and says, Ribbono shel Olam, yesh lecha adam kaze v'ata noisein Torah yodi. You have a man like this, a man so great, so awesome as Rabbi Akiva, and you decide to give the Torah through me. Omar lo, so the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, shtok, remain silent. Kach ola b'machshav lefonai. Thusly is my plan. I want it to be this way. Omar lefonov, Ribbono shel Olam, hareseini torasoi, hareini schoro, you have shown me his Torah learning, now show me his reward. Omar lo, chazor achorecha, go back, move back again. Chozal achorov, Moshe Rabbeinu moved back, ro'osh sheiklin besoro b'makulin, and he saw that Rabbi Akiva's flesh was being flayed off from his body in a butcher shop. Makulin is a place where meat is sold. As As you may know very well, Rabbi Akiva was one of the 10 holy martyrs, one of the 10 Asura Harugei Malchus, whose death was inflicted in the most vicious of ways, that while alive, his skin was flayed off his body. And this Moshe Rabbeinu saw. Omar Lefonov, Moshe Rabbeinu declares, he says, Ribbono Shelem, Zu Torah v'Zu Schara. This is this to be the reward, the outcome of Torah learning? Omar Loi Shtok. Once again, the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, remain silent. Kach Olo B'machshava Lefonai. And as one can reasonably understand, that there are aspects of life that the finite capacity of a human being, as great as he may be, the greatest of men that ever lived, Moshe Rabbeinu, but nevertheless human, and hence finite, cannot comprehend the plan, the design of the infinite, of the Almighty. And essentially that's the idea that's being revealed to us over here, that as long as we mortals are in this world, this physical finite world, there are things that remain a secret, remain mysterious, and that too is part of the divine plan, not for man to understand everything as far as that which takes place in this world. The pasuk says, "V'lo yirani ha'odom v'chai," and which is explained as, a person cannot see me, cannot perceive me, cannot understand me, cannot understand my ways and remain alive. That implies that it could be that after a person passes from this world and he enters the world of infinity and he assumes the form of the neshama, of the soul, it could be that in that state, what would appear to be a mystery to man in this world will eventually become revealed to him. But since we are discussing the context of Olam Hazeh, of this world, the finite world, the mortal world, things that appear confounding must remain a mystery. Omar Rava, Shiva Oisis Trichos Shlosha Ziyunim. The Elohim, there are 7 letters, that each one of which requires 3 added projections, and the names of the letters are reported by the Gemara in the 2 expressions, Shatnez Getz, which essentially means the letters Shin Ayin Tes, Nun Zayin Gimel, and Tzadi. Omar Ravashi, Chazino Luhu Lesifri Davkoni Debe Rav. I saw the accurate holy scrolls of the yeshiva. 2 points the Gemara mentions, and we've indicated them with an aleph and a beis. Aleph, the Chatri Luhu Legagi De Ches, that the roof of the Ches has a type of hump in it. This pshat is according to the Tosfos's pshat. Rashi has a slightly different shot, and in fact, in our Gemaras, you can see there are illustrations that accompany this particular section. And the second point is, V'tolu le lekare dehei. The leg of the hay, namely the left-hand leg of the hay, is suspended. It's not connected to the roof. The right-hand leg of the hay is connected, the left-hand is not. The first point, Chatre Lehu Legage de Ches, if you look in the Tosfos, you can see a picture where a Ches, actually Tosfos has a picture for Rashi and for his own Pshat, for the Tosfos Pshat. According to the Tosfos Pshat, the letter Ches is made of 2 Zions that are connected with a type of arched stroke of ink forming the roof. And a Chatre is a term that is used in the case of camels, referring to its hump. The Gemara now explains the symbolism of these 2 points. points. So the Gemara goes over them, Aleph, and we've underlined the introductions. Chatre lehu legage deches, klomar, chai hu berumo shel olam. It's a symbol of the Almighty who dwells in the heights of the world. So the letter Ches is associated with Chai, with being, with living, and the fact that it's projected upwards indicates Berumo, the heights, the heavens of the world. V'tolu le lekare dehe, the suspended leg of the hay, is symbolic of Kedeboi mine Rabbi Yehuda Nasio me Rabbi Ami. The understanding of this will unfold in a couple of stages. On the outside margin, we have a Nose Mivne. We should have noted maybe a little earlier that we had a previous Nose in which we had written Tiurim Shel Tsuras Osios, descriptions of the forms of letters, in which we described the Ches and the He. And now, in this Nose Mivne heading, you notice a diamond is featured. Shlavim, this represents his stages, but Birur, Hezber, Haposid, Bitchu, Bashem, Ade, Ad, etc. There will be a posid featured, and there will be stages in trying to understand what is meant. We will see a double underlining, which features answers, tshuvos. So let us now turn to the Gemara, realizing that there are a couple of stages here. We're asking right now concerning the suspended leg of the hay. So in order to get to understanding that, we go through the question that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya posed to Rabbi Ami. Mai dichtiv bitchu b'Hashem ad ki beko Hashem tzur oylamim? Omar le, kol ha-toyle bitchoynei b'kodesh baruch hu. The pasuk is telling us, says Rabbi Ami, that anyone who relies, puts his trust, toyle bitchoynei, puts his trust in the Almighty, Hare loy machse, loy lo mazeh, ula oylam haba. He has machse, a protection. He has he's shielded and protected in this world and in the next world. Omar lei, now we're approaching stage two. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya says, Ano hochi ko kashili. The following is what's difficult to me. In other words, I'm not asking as to what the explanation of the entire pasuk is, but rather my question was focused on one aspect of the pasuk. Maishno dichtiv biko velo ksiv ko. Why does the pasuk say ki biko? The yud and hey are the name of Hashem. It says biko Hashem sur olamim. The pasuk could have just as well said ko Hashem sur olamim, that ko Hashem, names of God, is the support for eternity. Why the base? So here an answer to that. And you can see the double underlining is, as we mentioned before, an answer. We might note beforehand, though, that this also forms what we call a long point. Could be called a long answer, but we're going to call it a long point. From here, the nun, you can see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, the nun with a vertical dashed line, taking you down to the end of the point. Kedidorash Rav Yehuda Rabeloi. Elu Shnei Oylomim. The bays. Bays is a numeral, is a letter, has a numeral equivalent of two. So it represents the two worlds, Shebora HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Echad Behe VeEchad Biyud. The Kodesh Baruch Hu made two worlds. One he made through the use of the letter He, and the other he created with the letter Yud. V'eini Yodea, but I don't know, im. I don't know, meaning at first glance, until we eventually get to the answer. I don't know at first glance, im ho'ilom haba b'yud v'olom hazeh b'hei, is the world to come, the world made with the yud, and this world made with the letter he, or im ho'ilom hazeh b'yud v'olom haba b'hei. Kishu Omer, when we see this other pasuk from Sefer Bereishis, from Parshas Bereishis, it says, Eile toldos ha-shamayim v'oretz behi bor'om. Al tikri behi bor'om, don't read it as that, but rather, Ela behei bor'om. Now, this pasuk, Eile toldos ha-shamayim v'oretz, is a reference to the creation of this world, the physical world. and we are to read the pasuk as behei, behei boram. The Shamayim v'aretz were created with the letter hey. Hevei omer, this will serve to answer the aforementioned question. That will tell us ha'olam hazeh behei, ha'olam haba biyud. We have a new marking in which we featured we emphasize each one of these worlds. And on the outside margin, you can see this bow tie form around the expression mitnei ma, and a double underline with design in it is emphasizing the continuation of the question of, namely, why is it that nivra ha'olam hazeh or haba with the hey and yud respectively. So you can see the Gemara at this point focuses on Olam Hazeh. That's if you focus on the bow tie here and that which follows. If you skim down a few lines, you'll see the Gemara turns its attention to Olam Haba and it's being made with a Yud. So here the Gemara asks, Umitnei ma nivra Olam Hazeh behei? Why is it that the Olam Hazeh was constructed, was made, was created with the letter Hey? The answer, Mipnei shedoyme la'ach sadra. The letter Hey, if you have a good imagination, looks like an achsadra. An achsadra essentially is an area that's a structure that's open on one side. It's enclosed on three sides. An achsadra, we had made reference to this on a previous daf Gemara in the sugya concerning not making structures that resemble the Beis HaMikdash, and we saw there not to make an achsadra that resembles the ulam being the entranceway to the Beis HaMikdash. Olam Hazeh is like an achsadra, is like a structure that's open on the fourth side. And what is the symbolism in that? And by the way, when we speak about the hay being looking like such a structure, you can see that the letter hay, is essentially closed on three sides and open on the fourth, on the bottom. So the symbolism is Shekol HaRoitze Lotzeitz Yetze. Olam Hazeh is a world in which there is free choice. And if someone wants to leave this world, leave meaning in as far as this world is concerned, a person is presented, as the Psukim in the Torah say, with two paths. There's the path of life and the path of the other way. If a person chooses the path of life, that's his option. If he chooses the path that leads to death, that's also an option. And that is revealed here, Shekola Roitze Lotzeis Yetze. If you want to leave, you can leave. Umay Taimo Talyo Kare, and why is it that the leg of the hay is suspended? The Hoder B'tshuva, if the person that chose the path of death, meaning the path of sin, the non-Torah way of life, if he decides to do tshuva, to repent and return to the right way, Miley Lay, he has a chance to go back into the world, and that's the little space between the left-hand leg of the hay and the hay, the roof of the hay. That little space is the we'll call it the not emergency exit, but the emergency entrance. The Gemara asks, V'layel b'hach, why not go in the same way he came out? The answer to that is, Lo mestaya milsa. He won't have success. What do you mean he won't have success? Kidde Reish Lakish. The understanding of this will be illustrated by Reish Lakish's teaching. De'amar Reish Lakish, my dichtiv, im leleitzim hu yolitz, ve'alano ulanovim yitain chein. Leitzim are scoffers, are people that are involved with levity and sin. Bo letaher mesayin oisoi. If someone chooses to purify himself, to repent, on his own, it's very difficult, if possible at all. In order to repent, in order to come back to the right way, Messiah, also he needs special heavenly assistance. And that's what's represented by the special extra entrance. In other words, if he left through the bottom of the hay, he can't come back the same way he left. That would show that there's no need for special assistance. But the making of a special entranceway, as represented by the little space between the suspended leg and the roof of the hay, this extra entranceway, that symbolizes the heavenly assistance needed for tshuva. However, Baal Letame, if a person wants to defile himself, Postano, the door is open. In other words, from Shemayim, he won't be shoved out, but a person on his own choice chooses to leave, chooses to exit. It's there, the door is open. Umay taimo is le tago. Why does the hay have a little crown? Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, im chozer bo ani kosher lo keser. Kadosh Baruch Hu declares that if a person makes the decision to come back, to do tshuva, he deserves a crown. And he says, I will place upon him a crown. Mipnei ma nivra oylam haba b'yud. Why is oylam haba described as being created with a yud, which is a very small letter? Mipnei shetzadikim sheboy mu'otim. Because the number of residents, of inhabitants of that olam haba, are few in number. The number of righteous are few, as represented by this small letter yud. Omipnei ma kofuf roshoi. Why is the head of the yud bent over? The tip of the head of the yud is bent over. Mipnei shetzadikim sheboy kofuf roshehen. Mipnei maaseyen she'enon doimim ze loze. Because the righteous themselves, each one noticing the actions of his friend and realizing that he himself did not achieve what the fellow tzaddik did achieve, feels a sense of embarrassment, and hence his head is lowered. Omar of Yosef, Hani Tarti Mili, Omar Rav Bisfarim. This is a new point. As you can see, there's a slash mark that precedes Omar of Yosef. And on the outside margin, before we learn it, let's take a look at our topic heading, the Nosei. Shnei halochos shel Rav. The Gemara will share with us two teachings of Rav, the Sefer Torah, that are connected with the writing of a Sefer Torah. Mivneh. The structural note is as follows. You'll see a house marking, and also to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, a numbering, 1, and the number 2 will appear at the very top of Daf Lamed Omid Aleph, the top line, where the word Idoch appears in a house. So these represent the Halochas Shel Rav U'Teguvos L'Toivoso, meaning that in the course of the Gemara, there will be additional appearances of these house markings with the point facing up. Where you see the house point facing up, they represent responses to benefit Rav's point. The house form, when it appears flipped over, kushos, they represent the difficulties for Rav's teaching. Turning to the Gemara, Omar Rav Yosef, Hani Tarti Mili, Omar Rav Bisforim. The following two points Rav teaches regarding Sforim, so the preparation of a Sefer Torah, Vitanyo Tiuvte, and the Tanaic source teaches to the contrary. It may be pointed out that there's a difference structurally between the first halacha and the second halacha of Rav. Structurally meaning in the way the Gemara treats it. The first halacha of Rav is repudiated outhand by a Tanaic source. And it seems that you have, on the one hand, Rav's teaching, and a repudiation of Rav's teaching by a Tanaic source. When it comes to Daf Lamed Omer Aleph, which Amir Tzashem will be the subject of the following shiur, the second halacha of Rav will be presented, but there will be a vigorous give and take. And at the end of the day, Rav's teaching there will be preserved, but only with difficulty. This point is featured in Tosfos. And this point is important because at first glance, when you read the opening of this section of Gemara, it simply says Rav has two teachings, and they are repudiated. But as we said, it's not entirely true. The first teaching is repudiated, rebuffed by a Tanaic source. The second teaching, if you look in the Tosfos, the second Tosfos from the end, he says, "V'tanya tyufta Bechado lav tiufto de gemurahi. With regard to one of the teachings, in this case the second teaching, it's not a total repudiation. Ela de bedoichak mitartza. Only with difficulty is the second teaching of Rav, in fact, maintained. And if you have the benefit of Daf Lamed in front of you, you will notice this by following the vigorous flip-flop form of the house marking in the case of number two, indicating a give and take, a back and forth structure until by the end of that section, Rav's original halacha number two, is maintained. So, what is halacha number one? So the Gemara says, Chado, Hod Yomar Rav, Sefer Torah, Sheesh Bo Shtei Toyos, Bechol Daf, Daf Yitakein. A Sefer Torah that has mistakes. Bechol Daf. Daf is a column of writing. As you may be familiar with a Sefer Torah, it appears in column after column of writing. So if there are two mistakes in each column of a Sefer Torah, it is something that can be fixed, yitakein. However, shalosh yigonez. If you have a Sefer Torah, and in each column there are three mistakes, then it must be put away. It's put out of service, buried. V'tanyo tyufte, but there's a Taneg source that repudiates this and says, shalosh yitakein arba yigonez. If there are three mistakes per column, that can be salvaged. If there are four, that has to be put away. Tana. There's another teaching that says, "Im yesh bo daf achas shlemo matzelis al kulo." If there is a column that is shlemo, literally would mean without mistake, is complete, that saves the entire Torah. In other words, at first glance, it would be teaching that if you have a column that's without mistake, then even if the rest of the Sefer Torah is filled with columns filled with mistakes, you wouldn't have to bury such a Sefer Torah. That one complete column will save it. Amar Yisrael bar Shmuel bar Marta, Mishmei de Rav, Vehu Dixiv Rube de Safra Shapir. This is provided that Rov of the Sefer is written properly. Amar Le Abai le Rav Yosef, I is Behu Daf Sholosh Toyos Mai. It was mentioned that if there is a single column that is shlema, it preserves the rest of the Torah. What would be if that column has three mistakes in it? Amalei, hoyo v'syohiv liskuni, miskan. Since three is a number that is possible to repair, so three is essentially called shlema. It's considered complete because it's a number that doesn't present a problem in the first place. The Hani Mili Chaseros, that we said if the columns are characterized by errors, it has to be put out of service. That's if you're dealing with errors that are a function of missing letters, that you left out letters. Avol Yeseros less lon ba. If the nature of the mistake is that extra letters were written, that would not be reason for getting rid of the Torah. Chaseros maitai malo, why are missing letters a problem? Amar Rav Kana mishum de merci kemenumar. Rav Kana explains because in order to fix a problem of a word with a missing letter, you have to insert the missing letter between the lines. So that if you have columns and columns of Torah with letters written between the lines, it gives an impression of being menumar, menumar being spotted. That it's not, you don't have a consistent white space between each line. Here and there, a letter is put in as a result of it being chaser, and that, if you have too much of that, it appears to be menumar, which is unpleasant, and therefore it's put out of service. Agro chamua de Rabbi Abba havele yaseros b'sifrei. The father of Rabbi Abba had a Sefer Torah with extra letters. Also lakami de Rabbi Abba. Amalei. And Rabbi Abba responded, you don't have to worry. Even though you have a Sefer Torah that has columns and columns with words that have extra letters in it, that it's not reason for despair, for putting it away. Because the halacha of mistakes, of let's say three or four mistakes per column, which is reason for putting it away out of service, that's lomar and elo b'chaseros. That's true only if you're dealing with the mistake of missing letters, avol yaseros, less lon ba. If the problem is extra letters, then that is not something that bothers us. With that, we complete our shiur for today.